You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
Good afternoon, Tusker, and good afternoon to the listening public. Yeah, so today, again, Lunchtime Doctor, we're in, and Trinidad and Tobago, it's been a real joy participating and hearing your comments, your feedbacks on this lunchtime segment, because, you know, we sit to have our meals, our lunch, and so many times we're eating and digesting. And information is always power. Knowledge is power, in fact, because information can be just there, and how we apply that information becomes knowledge. And when it comes to health, especially in family medicine and in primary healthcare, we have realized that health promotion and health education is a big part of keeping persons healthy, keeping persons away from any disease. And we really spend the time to sit with you, to hear your concerns, hear your ideas, and not just meet your expectations for your health, but family doctors, we spend some time also on that health education, that sort of explaining and making sure that you have a good grasp of your own health, and you're not just going through your health challenges or even your health wellness without that deep understanding of what you are experiencing. So today, I've been asking a lot of my colleagues, friends, followers, what are some of the topics that really affect us? What, you know, is very dear to us and important to us? And for the past 2 weeks, we spoke about sleep. But today, I want to take us through a journey and understanding of one of the most critical systems in our body, which is our cardiovascular system. Because heart disease and cardiovascular disease remains the leading cause of death in our Twin Island Republic. And when I say leading cause of death, I mean leading cause of premature death as well. If we look at our families, our friends, our co-workers, chances are we all know someone who has been affected by a heart attack or stroke. And today, I don't want to instill any fear. This segment, I would like to let you know, and you should finish listening to this segment with a feeling of more understanding how you can take charge of your cardiovascular health. And there's so much incredible power of modern day medicine that in 2026, we have so many tools, so many aids, so many medications, investigations, treatment options that can, one, help treat. And then you all have known my style by now, help prevent this cardiovascular disease. In March 2026, actually, the global medical community released new guidelines that are fundamentally changing how we prevent these cardiovascular events in the world. And across the world, everyone has realized that this is a huge problem. And today I'm going to share with you those and explain how the local statistics here in Trinidad and Tobago really need and is a real fire that we need to address, particularly when it comes to protecting our heart for the next 30 years. So let's start with the basics, Trinidad and Tobago and the listening public worldwide. Imagine that the plumbing is your home. You have pipes that carry clean water and pipes that carry away wastewater. And your body is pretty much the same. Your arteries are the high pressure pipes that carry oxygen and nutrients to every cell. And your veins are those that then return those products of metabolism and carbon dioxide and waste products back to the lungs, back to the heart. And essentially, this is our life. Our life is an exchange between the breath that we breathe in and that oxygen-carrying breath, life-carrying breath. And that exchange from the lungs is then goes to the heart. So when we talk about cardiovascular disease, we are talking about a breakdown in that plumbing. But it isn't just one pipe. You know, so many persons think only of the pipes in their heart, which is called like the cardiac arteries and the cardiac vessels, or the coronary arteries. But if the pipes to your heart get blocked, which can cause a heart attack, it means that the pipes in your brain can get blocked, and that's called a stroke. It means that the pipes to your legs can get blocked, and that's called a peripheral artery disease. So it's a system-wide issue, and that's why we have to treat the whole body, not just the symptoms. So when we speak about cardiovascular health, we're not just only talking about heart health, we're talking about your whole body and how do we reduce your risk of getting any cardiovascular disease. So let's actually talk about how this damage happens. And this is something that begins well within our teenage years. It's a process called atherosclerosis. And you can think of your arteries as having a very delicate inner lining, almost like a sheet of smooth, silky lining on the inside. And this lining of your artery is like the inside of a pipe, right? And this is supposed to be smooth, clear, and not have anything blocking, attached, or depositing on it. But here in Trinidad and Tobago, we have some of the highest rates of high blood pressure and diabetes in the Caribbean and the Western Hemisphere. And you can think of high blood pressure like a pressure washer that is turned up too high. So it starts to damage that smooth lining of the inside of your vessels. So it starts to act like, when you really turn that dial up, for those who have used the pressure washer, it can actually damage the surface that you are cleaning. And that's what high blood pressure effectively does. It starts to act like sandpaper to that typically smooth lining. And it is these little streaks, these little tiny scratches on the lining of your vessels, where the cholesterol in your blood, specifically the low density lipoprotein, or the bad cholesterol, or the lousy cholesterol, if you want to call it that, this is where it sees an opening and it dives into the wall of the artery. Okay? So I hope you understand that, Trinidad and Tobago, because essentially, we can have a lot of control over our cardiac health and our heart health. And it simply starts with a lot of the non-communicable diseases, particularly hypertension. So over years, this may start even in your teenage years. Now, with the advent of this sedentary lifestyle, we are seeing a lot of pediatric cases of metabolic syndrome, which is diabetes, hypertension, obesity, high cholesterol in children, very, very young ages. So this, where this may have started in the 40s for some individual in the past, now that plaque development is starting as early in childhood. So it's not just a blockage, this plaque. It's an inflammatory process that is lining and attacking the inside of your arteries, your pipes. So today we're going to learn how to put that inflammatory fire out. So I went and did some research, and again, we come back to this 2024 steps survey that the Ministry of Health produced. And this gives us a very clear, however, alarming picture of our nation's health. Over 80%, or approximately 80% of all deaths are due to non-communicable diseases. And one in every four deaths is heart-related. And, when we look at the statistics 2024 and compare it to those surveys that were done 10 years before on these things, everything is on the rise in terms of prevalence and meaning how many persons are suffering or living with things like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity. The thing is, we must ask ourselves what is changing. Certainly, our genetics aren't changing. And not only are we seeing more and more persons with these diseases, but we're seeing more and more persons with these diseases at an earlier age. And in fact, so much so here in Trinidad and Tobago, 61% of our adult population are overweight or obese. That is an alarming statistic because there's a direct link between weight and non-communicable diseases, which again, a reminder, accounts for 80% of our deaths. So why is this happening here? As I said, our genetics aren't really changing, but it's our culture. our culture of how we are living our lives has evolved from the fields and the oil and gas industry where our forefathers worked very tirelessly, right, under certain conditions. And we've gone from that very mobile, moving lifestyle to the offices. You may be listening to this from your office chair, from your corporate life. And it's great. All this is part of the modern world. But in developing and enjoying all the wonders of this modern world, we have to take into account our health and the way in which our human cardiovascular system has been designed to be a walking one, a moving one. And we have moved away from these active lifestyles of our grandparents' generations to this more sedentary lifestyle. And the thing is, we've also moved away from eating naturally. Over 94% of us aren't eating enough fruits and vegetables. That's an alarming statistic from the 2024 STEP survey. 94% of Trinbagonians aren't eating enough fruits and vegetables. And when my friends and families from around the world visit Trinidad, one of the first things they always ask for is fruits. What is in season? They just want fruits, 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 and vegetables. So, we are a nation that is overfed but undernourished when it comes to the nutrients that actually protect the heart. We have to be honest, Trinidad and Tobago, about these numbers if we really want to change them. And that's where I'd like to now jump into what can we change and what can we can what do we just accept? And this is known as your modifiable versus your non-modifiable risk. And things you can't change would be basically your age, your gender, your family history. If your father has had a heart attack at the age of 50, your genetic predisposition for a heart attack is simply set higher. But then there's the things that we can change, Trinidad and Tobago. In 2026, we know that both tobacco and even vaping or nicotine-containing products cause significant arterial stiffening. And that is why we see a lot of cardiovascular disease more prevalent in persons who use nicotine-containing products and tobacco. Another huge factor that improves your cardiovascular health is physical activity. And we see a direct link between physical inactivity and we truly are becoming a sedentary nation. And the World Health Organization recommends a minimum of 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week. And when we speak about exercise, comes in many forms, in many ways, but we keep it simple as family doctors. Anything that you do that causes your heart rate to go up a bit, anything that you do that you are performing and you have to take a few breaths every few words. So that would include things like gardening, cycling, dancing, brisk walking, jogging, and swimming. Swimming is definitely a very, very great exercise to incorporate. And so many persons I realize too that they are exercising, they are walking, but your mind is not present on what you're doing. And you are actually doing a lot of harm if you are exercising with a mind that is stressed, with a system that is increasing cortisol, increasing adrenaline. And you should be exercising with a sense of mindfulness. So even if you're on a treadmill or if you're walking around the savannah or down in Palmes Park in San Fernando in South Trinidad, you should be exercising with a sense of, look, this is my 30 minutes of my time. Let me listen to some music that soothes me or that inspires me, that moves me. Let me try to keep my mind away from any stress or anything like that. And then the final thing that we can modify is that dietary sugar. In Trinidad and Tobago, our high intake of sugar sweetened beverages.
Clear me, clear me. Is it clean, something to streak over our lives? Blessings of the Lord that make it rich and added no sorrow. We shall find.
Part related on the topic today. I'd be happy to take those questions and messages today.
All right, let me just give them the numbers there, Doc. 625-2257 and, of course, 627-3223. I see we do have a question coming in. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, boy. My blessed doctor, thanks so much for that information because I have freaks, Doc. So thanks for the info. Doc, is there any piece of equipment like how you measure PSA, sugar, cholesterol, that you could check your finger, put it in a meter, and tell you if you have colon cancer or any cancer? I understand they have this thing in America. I don't know if there's any in Trinidad, in the hospital, or which doctor may have that. Thanks a lot, Doc. We listen.
Yeah. Thanks for the good question there. And you know, this is now where it's exciting, my friend, where the future is heading with diagnostics and things like AI technology. We are learning a lot more with, you know, interventional radiology diagnostics that are telling us basically a lot about who we are. Particularly genetic testing is very exciting. Okay. When it comes to blood testing for cancer, the PSA continues to remain a gold standard for prostate cancer, meaning that it is the still best tool to tell you to screen for prostate cancer. What it means, and we could touch a little bit on it, it means that if your PSA is low, usually we use a value of less than 4, but we can consider that based on your family history, your serial and stuff. We are confident to say that there isn't any cells, cancerous prostate cells in your body. And that's why it's important, all men listening out there, go get your PSA test, especially our Afro-Caribbean men, annually. And the thing is, especially if you have a family history, try to get that test 10 years earlier than the family member who had it. Now, when it comes to colon cancer, as the caller asked, colon cancer, we still, the diagnostic methodology or screening methodology still remains either one of two things. You can do a colonoscopy, which is the gold standard, and that is the most direct and precise way of screening and checking for anything that looks suspicious within the colon. And then there are some stool tests, something called the fecal immunochemical test, FIT testing, where you take a sample of your stool and you test it. It's sent it to the lab and it's tested and it looks for any signs of colorectal cancer. There is a blood test called the CEA. It's not coming to me right now, embryonic antigen, I believe it is, but it's called the CEA. Now, the thing is, it's not a screening test. It's not a diagnostic test. It's a test that our surgeons and our oncologist specialists in the country and across the world, they use that blood test to see how well the treatment has worked. So it's not diagnostic. It's not a test to do, to see and test if you have colon cancer, but it is a test that they use to follow up after treatment and patients with that. So in the Americas and even in the UK and across the Atlantic, there's a lot of new tests that are coming out. So far, they haven't been approved for public use just yet. But there are certainly some exciting things that are coming forward in terms of diagnostics and testing in the world. So great question there. Yeah.
I see another call coming in here. Let's try this. All right. True, do try to call us back. We had some calls, from messages yesterday. Yesterday, we actually ran a rerun of one of your programs when you had the yoga specialist here. So we had somebody saying, hi, good day, Doc. What can I use to get some sleep at night? I tried sleeping pills, but nothing works.
Yeah, and that's exactly where maybe we'll play a rerun of the last two sessions, because sleep is not just something I can see in 2 minutes that will solve that issue. It is something that requires a full consultation, going through who that individual is, what their lifestyle is like, what their personality is like, what their sleeping patterns is like. And you know, there's something called sleep hygiene, and we are in the era of where a lot of information is out there. And if you just do any internet search on sleep hygiene from reputable sources, you can get really good information that you can start incorporating into your routines for sleep hygiene. Simple things like turning down the lights at night, less screen time, not eating 2 to 3 hours before you go and sleep. Simple things like that sometimes make huge differences. Where, you know, based interestingly in Trinidad, we have a culture and a mentality of a pill fixes everything. And that's a dangerous precedent because it's, especially when it comes to things like sleep and we just think, okay, I just need a pill to knock me out. That's a very, you know, you're taking away your power, you're taking away your ability to be in charge of your health. Yeah.
All
right. So let's dive back a little bit into the heart. Mm-hmm.
Right, we just have one more call. Let's just take this one more call.
Let's take that call.
Yes, hello, good afternoon.
Hello and good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Keep up the good work, Doc. What I would like to know, when you do the colonoscopy, right, like my friends in Canada, they say when they go up there and they see anything, they burn it out one time. I would like to know if in Trinidad, when they do that test, if that procedure could be done here one time. Have a good day. I'll listen up here.
Yeah, great, excellent question. And that's one of the pros about doing the colonoscopy, because where the same way how we were talking about the heart and the vessels in the heart, my friend, and we were talking about how plaque builds up on the inside of the heart, the vessels in your heart, and you can eventually get to a point where the plaque blocks off and it causes occlusion. The same way in the lining of the colon is the large intestine. You have your ascending colon, your transverse colon, descending colon. Anywhere along this part, you can have the start the development of cancerous changes. Now, how the good thing about this, the colon cancer particularly, is early detection actually results in curative outcomes, meaning that you can, once detected at the right stage, the surgeons can actually cure this cancer. And even so, there's something called a therapeutic colonoscopy. So it's not just simply a screening colonoscopy where you're looking for anything that looks suspicious. But once you see something like a polyp, you know, there are certain conditions that are precancerous, the gastroenterologists and some of the surgeons, they are general surgeons, trained to do what you call therapeutic colonoscopies, where they will clip that lesion. So the word is burn, yes, it's called cautery or cauterization. You can think of that polyp as a outpouching of the colon, and that over time that could become cancerous. So immediately when doing the colonoscopy, you are not just looking for early things, you are also removing anything that could potentially become cancerous. So that is done here locally in Trinidad and Tobago. And that is something that we highly recommend the colonoscopy as the test for not just a test, but a treatment too for colon cancer screening. And again, just to add to that, remember we had the recent data that was published from our cancer registry records from the Ministry of Health, and colorectal cancer has climbed that top 10 cancers in Trinidad and Tobago, and it is number 3 in both men and women. So it's the third most common cancer in the world, in Trinidad and Tobago, and worldwide, all around the world, our colleagues, our surgeons, our oncologists, our radiologists, and family doctors, we are ringing the alarm bells because we are seeing colon cancer happening at earlier and earlier ages amongst our population. Yeah. So again, once those calls come in, please, you feel free to interrupt. I love when those questions come in. We do have a listening audience that always asks these brilliant questions. So again, we come back to how to prevent ourselves from developing these heart attacks and these strokes. And in the past, we used to use these equations.
For more info, stay locked. Your blessing could be next. It's your season of overflow on the W107 FM, The Word.
What we're going to do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
Hey, remember when the DJ was your best friend and the music felt like home? We're bringing that back.
'30s and '40s. And what happened is these old calculators didn't catch them. They weren't taken into consideration, the 30-year-old, the 40-year-olds. They were saying, okay, maybe at the age of 35, 45, 50, that's when people start having their risk factors assessed. And it factors in kidney health, the new calculator. So it takes into consideration your EGFR, the way in which your kidneys are functioning, and your blood sugar readings, your HbA1c. So since diabetes is so prevalent in Trinidad and Tobago, PIFS gives us a much more accurate map of your risk. The previous calculators, they used to just ask, you know, do you smoke? Do you have high blood pressure? Do you have diabetes? So what this actually does, it predicts heart failure. And this is the first time our risk calculators have been able to tell us if your heart is likely to weaken over the next 30 years, you know? So in the past, we would see a patient come in the office with a reading, a cholesterol LDL reading of 130, and say, well, that's okay, you know, when we check your total cholesterol, it's still like less than 200. We'll say, well, you know, you don't smoke, you don't have diabetes, we would say an LDL of 130 in the past. Well, we'll just work on that with some lifestyle. But the new guidelines are based on the principle and the philosophy, lower for longer. Because we have some hard targets now to maintain that LDL at low risk and as low as possible in our population. So when we calculate your risk, you'll be placed into three categories of your 30-year risk. Low-risk adult, high-risk adult, and very high-risk adults. And generally, your low-risk adults is persons who don't have any of the risk factors that we spoke about earlier, you know? Your high-risk adults would be persons who are living with diabetes, hypertension. And then your very high-risk adults would be persons who have existing heart disease. And the goal now for low-risk adults is to aim for that LDL, that low-density lipoprotein C especially, to be less than 100 milligrams per deciliter. So what that means is that when you, as someone who didn't have high blood pressure or diabetes, go and have that fasting lipid profile blood test done, learn to ask your doctor about the LDL, because many times now we want that to be less than 100 for everybody. And many times it's above 100. Now we talk about the genetic risk factors here in the Trinidad and Tobago and its diaspora. Now high-risk persons, that is for persons who have diabetes, have hypertension, we actually recommend keeping that LDL less than 70 milligrams per deciliter. So, you know, that is why I recall maybe this study came out about 10 years ago, or more, 15 years ago, actually, this study came out. And it recommended that for patients with diabetes, that we place them on a statin, which is that cholesterol tablet. And when I looked at the data, it had great merit in understanding why this was done. And that in keeping this LDL low, we found that patients who had diabetes, but their total cholesterol was not necessarily high, but placing them on the cholesterol medication reduced their risk of having heart attacks and stroke. And then very high risk would be persons who already have existing heart disease, and the goal is now less than 55 milligrams per deciliter. So the research and the evidence have found that at these very low levels, you can actually stabilize the plaque with just medication so that it doesn't pop and cause a heart attack suddenly. So if your numbers are higher than these targets, you are leaving your heart at risk. And Trinidad and Tobago and everyone listening, this is a simple blood test that you can do. In your annual checkups, ask for your fasting lipid profile and really take a close look at that lousy fella called low-density lipoprotein C. And again, correlate that with your risk, meaning sit with your physicians, your family doctors, your cardiologists, and really know what your risk is for the next 30 years. So much so now that we are seeing to calculate that risk from when persons are teenage, from as young as young adults, young adolescents, we're saying to find out what your risk factor is. And the reason why is because of genetics. There's a test now that was not used regularly, but in 2026, the world is saying this is a vital test, and that is the LPE. And you can think of this as sticky cholesterol, and it is 100% genetic. So that means that you could be running marathons, you could be eating salads, you could be doing everything, not smoking, not drinking, exercising, and you can have this genetic risk factor that is this sticky cholesterol. So you need to test this at least once in your life. And if it's high, we have to be much more aggressive with your other numbers. And then there's the ApoB test now that is also recommended in certain instances. You can think of this as like counting the number of cars on the highway instead of the total weight of the cars, because more cars means more chances of a rupture, more chances of a heart attack, more chances of a crash. And this is specific for patients who have diabetes. And in 2026, this is some of the new recommendations, how we screen and modern latest advice for screening and action. The other thing that's, you know, if you're on the fence whether you need medication or not, is now where our radiologists come in. We use the calcium scan or the CAC score, and our cardiologists, they interpret this together with some specialized radiologists. It's a 5-minute CT scan that looks for bone-like calcium in your heart's arteries. So if your score of zero is, if you have a score of zero, your risk is very low. However, if you have a score over 100, you have a significant plaque, and that needs to act now with your cardiologist and getting possibly treatment for that. So Trinidad and Tobago and everyone listening, know your numbers. Don't just settle for normal. Don't just settle for, well, I do a random thing and it wasn't a fasting lipid profile blood test and it did look okay, the total was okay. No, ask for your specific low density lipoprotein C blood test, and know everyone in Trinidad should start getting to know what is their cardiovascular risk. The World Health Organization, through the HEARTS program, they have a risk calculator for your heart risk. But even now, this has gone beyond that calculator, and there's something called your PREVENT score that I'd really recommend a lot of persons to know. So I'd love to know what your thoughts are, what your comments are, your questions, and really Trinidad and Tobago, cardiovascular health. I'm confident that each and every one of us here have been directly affected by cardiovascular health. I personally lost my grandfather to a stroke, and he was living with diabetes. And before that, prior to that, he was one of the strongest male persons in my life. And I like to think of primary healthcare and family medicine as exactly that. You know, it's not as glorious as my colleagues in the operating theaters and the accidents and emergency doing these wonderful things when these severe disease happens and illnesses. And that's the perks, and that's the real modern medicine is really, really good at these emergencies and these modern robotic surgeries and modern treatment for all these complications. You know, long ago, just 15, 20 years ago, or maybe 25 years ago, if you had a heart attack, you were up to the mercy of the medications that were given. Now you have percutaneous coronary interventions, and you can have such an acute intervention for ensuring that the blood flow to the heart is not locked off and that ischemia doesn't take place too. And that same surgical interventional procedure, which is usually done by the interventional cardiologists, is also in the brain. You have interventional stroke physicians who can, if in the right timing, the scans and the tests are performed, they can actually remove the occlusion to that part of the brain and return blood flow to that segment of the brain. So, you know, that's all wonderful and that's all reassuring. And I really pay kudos to my colleagues who've spent dedicated decades of their lives. And this is after becoming a doctor, to specialize and become these interventionalists. But your humble family physician here is always plugging in and always making a plea for, let's try to not even end up in that situation.
All right, let's take a couple of calls there, Doc, sure. When you're ready.
Right. Let's take the calls.
All right. Sure. Hello, yeah. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Alexa, Paul.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Doc. Yeah,
you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
I just want to find out, can an infected tooth affect my heart? I listen off air.
Definitely. Dental health and heart health are very much correlated. And not just an infected tooth, but your whole dental and oral hygiene is very, very connected. Your mouth is like the home to hundreds of bacteria. And if you have gum disease, things like I'm not going to get into the technicalities of it. But what my dentist friends would tell you is that your gum tissue, if it becomes inflamed and ulcerated, this allows oral bacteria to enter your bloodstream directly through this bleeding gums. So it's not, you know, we say an infected tooth, but it's not really the tooth that so much is infected, but it's the gum, that this gum disease. And once these bacteria enter the blood, they trigger a response. Your body is trained that anything foreign enters it, there must be an immune response. And depending on how aggressive your immune system is and how much inflammation it produces a marker called C-reactive protein. And this is a test and a marker of inflammation. And this chronic systemic inflammation is a primary driver for narrowing and hardening of the arteries. All right? It's very, you know, these scholars are well-researched. I'm sure they went to medical school at some point in time. Because that's such a great question, how much we should maintain our oral health and ensure that we do not have this. You can think of it as, if you have this cavity that you're just never treating, or you have this gum disease that you always just putting off treatment and these things, that is actually a driving force for narrowing your arteries, because your body is seeing it as, hey, Vasant has this gum disease and it's only producing this bacteria. I'm going to produce more inflammation, and that chronic systemic inflammation is what causes the plaque and the atherosclerosis to develop in the arteries. So, great question. I'll keep those questions coming in. I really love to hear these questions from you guys.
Let's get another one here. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks again, Doc. Doc, every 6 months, I do my cholesterol test. Here's the thing. The LDL, we know about it. The HDL, we know about it. But then you have this one called triglyceride. I asked my doctor what it is. Because my was in 97. He said, don't worry about it. It's good. Tell me exactly what it is. Thanks a lot. We listen up here.
Definitely. Yeah. So triglycerides is when we consume food, sometimes your body doesn't have use for everything right away. So it's the way your body stores fat, you know. So while everybody focuses on cholesterol, triglycerides are actually the most common type of fat in your body. So if cholesterol is the, like, you know, the building material of your cells, you could think of the triglycerides as the fuel your body uses for energy. However, if you have too much fuel sitting in your pipes, it also is like another thing that becomes, could help contribute to blocking these pipes. So it is a major risk factor for heart disease as well. And this, in Trinidad, there's a huge connection between high triglycerides because of our dietary patterns. Because in Trinidad, we love sugar. There's also a love for beer, particularly alcohol, beer consumption in Trinidad. And alcohol and high intake of sugar-sweetened beverages, particularly the white things, and even things like white flour, meaning roti, white bread, these can cause a rapid spike in your insulin, which tells the liver to churn out more triglycerides. And even moderate drinking as well can significantly raise these levels in some people. So, and this is where also the link with diabetes, because we have these high rates of insulin resistance in Trinidad and Tobago. Our bodies struggle to clear these fats from the blood, leading to that milky appearance in high-risk blood samples. You know, and why this is dangerous? It contributes to the hardening of the arteries in a specific way. So high triglycerides change the quality of your LDL cholesterol. They turn them into these very low dense lipoproteins, which is called VLDLs. And it also, the triglycerides pushes the HDL down. So when your triglycerides go up, your body says, well, I don't need to make more cholesterol. The HDL actually goes down. And that's a double whammy and a double hit to your heart's protections. And in some instances, high triglycerides can actually damage your pancreas, because it can cause inflammation of your pancreas. So when you look at your numbers, my friend, definitely ask your physicians about your triglycerides. Generally, according to the latest guidelines, we want to keep our triglycerides below 150 milligrams per deciliter, and definitely be treating it anywhere above that. Okay. Okay, maybe I can also how to lower the triglycerides, right? Because the triglycerides is actually more responsive to lifestyle than the LDL cholesterol. So the LDL cholesterol, we routinely recommend the statins to ensure that we achieve our targets. But when it comes to triglycerides, the number one way of reducing your triglycerides is reducing white flour, white rice, the added sugars. This can drop your triglycerides significantly in just a matter of a few weeks. Healthy fats, so replace the saturated fats like butter or those fatty meats with omega-3 high fatty acid containing foods that is found in fish, seeds, walnuts. Those are your fatty acids that are really healthy. And of course, alcohol. So many patients of mine, when we sit and we look at their results and we look at the triglycerides, it is correlated with, especially, you know, in Trinidad, we are seasonal. There's a time and a season that things go up. So if your levels are in the high or very high range, the 2026 guidelines suggest a trial of zero alcohol to see how much your liver can recover. So that's why we strongly recommend to persons now, try a dry spell, try a few months of no alcohol, and you would actually see a huge improvement in your liver health. You see a huge improvement in your triglycerides, your lipid profile, and your insulin resistance actually is improved significantly with this. And then finally, exercise. Physical activity, my friends, helps your muscles burn the triglycerides for fuel rather than leaving them to circulate in your blood. So, you know, it comes like there's, I know some persons and they, it's a good philosophy that they simply burn out what they put in. So they know that, look, I can have my doubles, I can have my ice cream or cake in moderation, because they know they exercise routinely every day. You know, and more I am seeing Trinidad and Tobago, we're getting into a more active lifestyle. We are active people. Tell us to jump up and do anything we dare, we could move. But we need to do that now more regularly, more consistently. There's a great philosophy out of
the East. Yeah, hold on. Yeah, hold on, caller. Hold on. Yes, we do have a call. Hello. All right, caller, go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon, Doc. How can I reduce my creatinine levels? I would listen off air.
Yes, great. And in fact, I want you to listen off air for just the answer to this question, but certainly in the upcoming weeks, we're going to have a dedicated session to kidney health and creatinine level to the listening public. This is the check light or the check engine light for your kidneys. It is creatinine is a normal waste product that is produced from your body, and your job of your kidneys is to make sure that it is removed from the system. So once your muscles and your body is working and alive, it will create creatinine. So that's why in some persons who are more into the more muscular lifestyle, their creatinine will be a little bit higher, and does not mean that there's anything necessarily wrong. But when the kidneys aren't operating at 100%, that creatinine builds up. And we use that to calculate something called your eGFR, which tells us your kidney function and what stage of your kidney is, and if there's any signs of chronic kidney disease, together with tests like urine samples to look for any micro proteins in your urine, together with the creatinine. What you can do to lower your creatinine, the big two drivers in Trinidad and Tobago, my friend, is hypertension and diabetes. The lower your blood pressure, the better it is for your kidney. High pressure damages the glomeruli, which is like the fine micro plumbing of your kidneys. And we aim for tighter blood pressure control, less than 130 over 80 to prevent further scarring. And blood sugar, if you do have diabetes, glucose in the blood acts like a sticky syrup, and it clogs the filters. And if you can keep your HbA1c, if you do have diabetes, under 7%, it is one of the best ways to keep your creatinine from rising. And again, diet is so, so important. While protein is essential, especially persons do have chronic kidney disease, we transition to more plant-based proteins like lentils, beans, peas, and these are often easier on the kidneys as compared to those red meats especially. And finally, what you can do is hydration. Creatinine will rise because there isn't enough fluid to flush it out. And it's a fine balance between drinking too much or drinking less. And the best way to know this is really to observe your urine. Aim for clear to pale yellow urine, unless you have specific recommendations from your nephrologist or your physicians. And a point I want to make in Trinidad and Tobago that I see abused is the use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. This is critical because this is like a poison for your kidney when used chronically. So this is things like your ibuprofen, your diclofenac, your naproxen. And it's common in Trinidad that we use this long-term, meaning every day persons use this for their aches and pains. But this can cause a sudden sharp rise in your creatinine by reducing the blood flow to your kidneys. So we strongly recommend, you know, people joke a lot about the hospitals and the health centers and say, well, they are Panadol, paracetamol doctors. But there's logic when a doctor prescribes paracetamol over an NSAID, especially for long-term use of pain management. In the short term, there is a rule for it, and it works really well. But definitely you should not be, you know, there are persons who I know go routinely for their fix, their little injection that they think is this little booster and anti-inflammatory and these things like that. But these are the things, my friends, that will really affect your kidney health. And we'll go into this in depth in one of the upcoming programs, but certainly a great question. Yeah. So, where were we?
just one more. We had one more early on from, sorry to this, just one more from Pinal, of good friend Mr. Pinal.
Good day, Doc. Calling from Pinal. You are right when you say we are accustomed to taking a pill, and that's how we look at dealing with our health issues. But if you go to the doctor and you have diabetes or pre-diabetes, he doesn't really give you a whole lifestyle change, you know. He will tell you diet and exercise. And I mean, how good that you are making a good diet or making an exercise program. So that is lacking from the professional side. So you have a lifestyle disease, here's a pill. So people start thinking in that way. And when you start to say, well, listen, there's this whole other field of therapy for what you're suffering, field of treatment, diet, exercise, you know, you can exploit deeply and so on, you get some resistance because that's not what their doctors are telling them. So you have a lifestyle disease, here's a pill. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. And you know, the thing is, here's also the other side of that caller from Pinal experience. So he's giving the patient experience. From the physician point of view, we also know that persons lead very hectic, stressful lifestyles. And while sometimes we may make the recommendations, we are very conscious of the fact that it may be impractical. It may very well be that someone is so busy that they can just have two slices of bread and a cheese and on the morning have a cheese sandwich and that's their diet, you know. So while they work on that, we do prescribe the medications. And I always alluded to, if you have a fire, you have to out it with water, and that's your medications. That's not the time to say, oh, well, yeah, we'll build a pond, we'll build a drain, we'll build a moat, and we'll protect our home from fire. You have to treat when it's necessary. So that's a key point there. But, you know, lifestyle change requires a personalized, individualized approach. Maybe you come from a family of cyclists, and that's something that means more to you. Maybe you have a diet that is more styled with certain herbs and spices, and that's when our healthcare professionals, we are seeing the value of traditional medicine, integrative medicines. We prescribe things like, you know, ginger to our pregnant mothers who are vomiting. We prescribe things like garlic and turmeric and these things like that. We see the value in therapies such as mindfulness, yoga therapies, and it requires Trinidad and Tobago and everyone to recognize that health is not simply waiting for this reactive time of when things go haywire. Health is this, what we are doing right now. Health is this constant joy of, you know, living this human experience, understanding our human body, our human system, so that we can perform and live our lives optimally. You know, and so many persons say, you know, they don't really care to live long per se, but they want to live healthy until their last moment. And that's a fair philosophy, because the good thing about modern medicine is we can keep you alive, you know. We can give you treatment for sickness and disease that is there. You see it all the time. We amputate a diabetic feet. We do all these surgeries and operations. We have persons on dialysis. We are good at doing that. But to the person there, whether whatever state of health you are in right now, know that you have the power, as long as you are breathing, to maintain your health so that it doesn't get worse. And even more so, you have the power to improve your health. And that's why this field of family medicine is about improving the health, not just of ourselves, but of families, our communities. And that way we have a much healthier Trinidad and Tobago and a population. And that health that we're speaking about is not just a number, it's not just a HbA1c or a blood pressure reading. That health we're talking about is your mental health, your emotional health. Well, how well do you contribute to society? How well do you able to play with your grandchildren, your grandkids? All this is part of healthcare and what we should be aiming for. So as always, BS and to the listening public, I always enjoy these programs, and I say, you know, truly appreciate when our callers call in and the messages you all send. They're truly stimulating, and I look forward each and every week to engaging with you all. Like I said, we're going to talk kidney health very soon, so stay tuned to that and for that next week. So Trinidad and Tobago, stay healthy, keep improving your health, maintaining your health, and you will hear from me next week. Thank you all.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.